I have appointed you a watchman for the house of Israel. These are challenging words, and they apply not just to the old Israel, but to the new Israel, which is the church, to its leaders, its bishops, priests, and to moms and dads, heads of households. We have been made watchmen for the house of this new Israel. If I tell the wicked, you shall surely die, and you do not speak out to dissuade him from his wicked way, the wicked shall die for his guilt, but I will hold you responsible. This is the responsibility that each of us bears for the world and its condition and the way it is now, because we've been silent for too long. Oh, we've heard so many times that judge not lest ye be judged, and that's been a cover for silence and not saying anything, when actually we needed to speak. We needed to challenge the people around us, sometimes our own families. St. Augustine wrote a lengthy homily on Ezekiel just for this purpose, and he challenges, first of all, the bishops. Now, he starts off quoting again Ezekiel, "Woe to the shepherds of Israel who have been pasturing themselves." He says, "Should not the shepherds rather pasture the sheep? You have fed off their milk, worn their wool, slaughtered their fatlings, but the sheep you have not pastured. You did not strengthen the weak, nor heal the sick, nor bind up the injured. You did not bring back the strayed, nor seek out the lost, but you lorded over them harshly and brutally." So it's a challenge now to the shepherds. Well, Augustine begins with a lament, again, over the failure of the many shepherds to teach the truth. Again, after the Lord shows what the shepherds esteem, he shows what they neglect. The defects of the sheep are widespread. There are very few healthy and sound sheep, and the few that are solidly sustained on the truth. Augustine here speaks of the fact that there are far too many not sustained by the food of truth. Now, that's going to be our duty, to live the truth, speak the truth, call others into the truth. Now, if you look around and you say, what should the bishops today consider? Well, think about this for a moment. We've had a shocking meltdown of an entire culture in the last 60 years. Shocking. Again, in the 50s, 1950s, 3 out of 4 Catholics went to Mass on Sunday. Now it might be 20%, maybe. Again, we've seen a terrible drop in the number of marriages from 1994 to 2024. We had a 75% decline in the number of marriages. We went from 4,500 marriages a year, Catholic marriages in this archdiocese, to a little over 1,100 in this last year. Now again, these numbers are constant. I've checked them from here to Milwaukee to St. Louis to Newark. I've checked them around the country. It's a constant. In other words, people are not getting married. And that's a problem because the church lives by marriage. It is the union of Christ and his bride, the church. And people who don't marry don't join churches. Again, there's a problem here. They're not on the path of salvation. So these are challenges for us right now. Again, we've had, in addition to the demise of marriage, 65 million abortions since Roe versus Wade decision. Let me assure you, there have not been 65 million confessions of guilt, because those wounds then, unconfessed, undealt with, remain on the hearts of all those involved in those abortions, and they paper over them with materialism and pleasures and such like that to cover over what is actually something very wrong that they've done. And again, that's going to be a disturbance in their lives. All of these things are disturbing, not only for the individual, but for the culture around them. We've gone now to the point where we have pornography everywhere. It's ubiquitous. And again, now the celebration of homosexual acts with gay marriage. All of this is not just deviant and not just private. Now it's public. Even at the state fair, to have drag queen shows at our state fair right now, this is crazy. And it's going on unchallenged. And it needs to be challenged. Again, we've got gender confusion. All these things are the erosion of a once Christian culture, and we, the watchmen, bishops, priests, moms and dads, we need to not be silent. We've all got a stake in this, the rebuilding of a Christian culture. We've got a stake. We've got a role. We've got a responsibility here. Again, we have to find out just what we can do about this. Well, for instance, for the bishops, one of the things that I think we should be looking at is how to rebuild a marriage culture. Now, that might take 50 or 100 years. The last thing that'll be changed will be the laws. But right now, one of the things we have to recognize is that no-fault divorce has been terribly corrosive to marriage. Either party wanting out can get out. Before then, the state, you had to have grounds to get out, and the state kept you together until then. We're going to have to use various, even legal devices, perhaps even a prenuptial agreement that would bind the couple together unless certain circumstances are met. We have to cut off our escapes. Remember how Cortez, when he came to the New World, burned his ships in order to gain the loyalty of his men. Well, we have to burn our ships too with regard to marriage. We have to rebuild a marriage culture. And yes, we have to challenge the pornography culture. We see that it's everywhere. But you know what we haven't had? We haven't had a million people march on Washington demand that it be filtered. We haven't had 10 million people do so. Do you know that it's actually filtered in Muslim countries? And in a Christian country, we haven't done a thing? In other words, we're the watchmen, the bishops, the priests, moms and dads. We're the watchmen over a culture. We've not challenged this thing. Oh, we try to come up with filters, but we haven't challenged the principle itself that we've allowed things to get out of hand. And that's our duty. It's a responsibility. We have to dare to speak. We haven't done that. We've been too silent. So again, these should be some of the bishop's initiatives and some of those things what you and I are able to do. The rebuilding of a marriage culture, the challenging of immorality on all these fronts, that's possible. Not going to be easy, but it's doable. It's leadership. It's what we do. We dare to speak the word into a world that's wrapped in darkness. That's what we do. So this is the challenge now, in one sense, for the bishops, though it's going to trickle down to all of us. What about priests? What is our role? I met a fellow not too long ago, a priest in another state, not even Minnesota, and we were talking about various things. A wedding was coming up, and we had about an hour to chat back and forth, and we're talking about how he leads his parish, and he's describing how, well, he says, on Holy Thursday, it's a more conservative crew, so we do things more conservatively. On Good Friday, it's actually more liberal, so we go that direction. I said, so does that mean that you're following your congregation and not leading them? It's kind of a challenge there. That's a problem. We're supposed to form people in the light of Christ, in the teachings of the church, in the sacred rituals that will build us up and lead us into the light, move our hearts in the right direction. We don't just follow the crowd. We lead the crowd. We know what God has said. We know how he wants us to act. So we challenge. So we priests, sometimes we're more concerned with making a welcoming community than a community of life and truth and holiness. And a welcoming community would never say anything offensive, never say anything disturbing, never do anything that would challenge too many people because they might not be comfortable. But in the end, they die. They spiritually die for want of food, for want of a shepherd. So our responsibility is not to make a welcoming community, but a loving community that walks in the light and in the truth and supports one another and builds one another up. So it's a challenge here for the priests as well. What about for moms and dads? What's your job? Well, you know, all those marriages that have maybe taken place outside the church, we shouldn't be attending those. When Catholic kids get married outside the church, we shouldn't be going to those things. We should say, kids, you know what? If Jesus can't bless it, neither can I. And I'm not going to open my wallet for you. You're Catholic. You get married in the church, or I can't support this. Mom and Dad will wish you well. We might give you a crucifix that's so nice you can't throw it away, but we can't be part of this. It's not right. The same is true when the kids move in together, the cohabitation. You have to challenge that. You have to say, kids, what you're doing is wrong. It's called living in sin. Those intimate acts belong to the married. And if you're a good couple, maybe you should get married. But one of the things I notice that many people move in together because it's convenient. Obviously, it's affectionate. There's pleasure associated with it. But very often, they're not a very good mix. They're not a very good match. And what that means is all those years that they're living together, they're not finding the right spouse, not finding the place that they ought to be. I met a man one time who was 35 years old, had lived with a woman for 10 years that he didn't love. And in fact, he said he felt guilty for sleeping with a woman that he didn't love, but the intimacy was too strong and he never broke away. Well, finally, after those 10 years, he did break away, but the wedding window closes. He hurt himself. In other words, yes, mortal sin wounds the soul, takes away the state of grace. If we die that way, we're alienated from God. There's a terrible thing in mortal sin, but he actually also hurt himself on a natural level. He missed the marriage window. He missed the spouse he could have married. The chance of catching up is slim. And he did it to himself. Again, sin brings its own punishment. But was he ever challenged by his friends? Was he challenged by his parents? Was he challenged anywhere else? These are the things we have to say. So moms and dads, we've got a role in this rebuilding of the culture. We've got something to say. Marriage is a big part of it. Morality is a big part of it. And how you live your life right now, that's a big part of it. You know, we teach our kids, we challenge them, we pray with the kids all the time. I know a fellow who's of happy memory now, and a very fine doctor and a very strong Catholic, a medical doctor and an anesthesiologist, and he took his faith to heart. This was a man who was living his faith out in the medical community. He didn't say, well, I'm a Catholic over here, but here I'm a doctor. No, he brought his faith to work. And so he refused to do immoral procedures like abortions or vasectomies. He wouldn't do any of those things that were immoral. And he actually was part of a small group of anesthesiologists. Unfortunately, what happened is they got brought into a bigger group. They merged with a bigger group. And finally, he was fired from his own group. They refused to allow him to be part of their own medical group because he wouldn't do immoral procedures. And every morning he decided he's going to go to the hospital anyway. Show up at 6 in the morning. He'd hang out in the surgical boarding area. That's the toughest part of the day. That's where all the cases are divided up and the surgeons would make their requests. And the surgical operating room teams were formed that day. And everyone walked past him with their heads down. And they walked right past him and nothing, he was never called to be part of any of their surgeries. And he did this every day, and he prayed his rosary there, and he stayed till lunch, and then he'd wait again, and then he'd go home. And this went on for 3 months, till finally another good doctor found out this was happening and invited him in. And then he found himself invited in for another whole group that was ENTs and orthos. And he found himself blessed beyond measure because he stood with Christ. He did what was right. He stood in the light. He stood against the evils of his day and even against the pressures of all those around him who weren't doing the right thing. And he stood in the light. Can you imagine the power of that witness on his own medical community, on his own children? These are the things that good men do to witness to their faith. You and I have to be part of that. Again, we're going to teach our kids. We're going to raise them in the faith. They're going to see us. They're going to see us living our faith. This is a doctor who is not only praying his rosary, but you know how there's always doctors' coats hanging around in lounges, and sometimes they lose their coats and nobody knew whose it was. They'd all say, well, just check the pockets. If it's got a rosary in it, it's this doctor here. He prays rosary. He led his family in the daily rosary. He put his kids through Catholic schools. He did his best for his family, and he formed the kids. Do you know one of the things that we have to do is not only form the kids in right and wrong and all these deep moral matters, the kind of the foundational things, but one of the things right now that we're absolutely blind on is the rise of socialism. And the church has spoken mightily against socialism, not against Social Security, against the socialism that makes everything free and everybody dependent upon the government. The church has spoken mightily against this. Started in 1891 with Rerum Novarum and the robbing of private property, which is really what socialism is ultimately going to do to us. And there's so many things that we see. It leads into totalitarianism. And nobody says a word. Do you know that you, moms and dads, could go read the church's social teachings? You go back to Rerum Novarum, great, great document. You're going to see stuff in there that you have the right to private property. You have the right to hand on your earnings and your possessions to your children. Socialism doesn't allow that. Everything is communal. And all animals are equal, but pigs are more equal. There's always a hierarchy. And we're headed towards that right now. Margaret Thatcher once said that socialism is great until you run out of other people's money. Well, we're headed down the wrong track. Our kids are embracing it as though it's the answer. And we've been silent. It's utterly destructive to a whole community, of a business community, and of a whole social life. So we're eroding the moral fabric. Now we're eroding the social fabric. And we've been silent. Bishops, priests, moms and dads, you could read these things. You could learn these things. You could pass them on. And you know, the place you pass it on is the dinner table. You talk to your kids at the dinner table. They're expected to be there. And if you don't hear your own opinions coming back from the kids, that means somebody else is raising your kids. And again, the disturbance in the culture gets to spread. That's not what a watchman does. A watchman for the house of Israel has another role. He looks into the future. He sees what's coming. He recognizes the problems. He dares to speak. That job belongs to bishops, priests, and also to moms and dads, all of us right here. That's our goal. So this is a wonderful day for us to examine, how am I doing? Am I on track? Am I forming my kids? Am I forming my workplace? Do I live the light? That's going to be the mission. Again, this is the responsibility. He's appointed all of us to be watchmen for the house of Israel.